Welcome to another episode of the Reader Universe. This time I have a guest called Alps Lifey. He's a filmmaker, really into his gear, which he will talk about in the Patreon edition. But for this version, he's just going to talk about a little bit of his background, how we kind of met, your filmmaking experiences as a filmmaker. There's a lot of people out there listening who find inspirations from people like me and you. So maybe you can give them a bit about how they can start as a filmmaker, what struggles they could face, challenges, failures.
Yo, what's up, everybody? I'm Alps Lifey, filmmaker from London, and I am here today with Blake Ritter. We are going to be talking about me as a filmmaker, a little bit about my history, how I met Blake, etc.
How did we meet? I don't know if you've listened to my first episode of this podcast. I talked about my introduction to filmmaking journey. There was one part I mentioned about how I grew on my YouTube channel, and then I met a guy called Kai, and then he introduced me to you, and that was a very special moment for me.
Well, it was, I can't remember exactly. I think he said someone needed I think you needed a film, right, at that time?
I wanted to make a short film called What Happened to Callie.
Yeah.
And, are you laughing at? Why is it so funny?
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that another time. basically, I met Kai through a group of YouTubers, and you know, I was trying to group together some creatives because I believe that when you have like a group of people who are in the same mindset, it becomes a lot easier to make stuff, to talk about stuff. Because you know, you talk to your friends about like filmmaking or whatever, and they're like, yeah, whatever, should we just go down the pub and have a drink or something like that, you know? So it was very important for me to start developing a network of creatives on a similar level who could like get excited when I talk about cameras and lenses and memory cards, you know, whereas other people would just kind of look at me and be like, yeah, okay, this is boring. So that was the first focus. And then through Kai, I didn't actually meet him too much. I think I met him like once or twice. And then he introduced me to you and he was like, you know, you got this film coming up. I think he was supposed to be on it as well, but he ended up not being there because he was tied up in something else. What transpired after that, I think, was like a kind of a hectic first short film, and a lot of anticipation, but also a lot of learning. And it was interesting because like your first short film cost more than any of my other films put together.
Yeah. By the way, guys, if you want to spend a lot of money on your first short film because you want to make it perfect, don't do it, because whatever you do, it'll be shit.
Yeah. Well, I think the main issue was is like, and I still remember to this day because I was laughing because he showed me the script length and I was like, you got like 10 pages here.
I think it was 15 pages.
Was it 15?
Yeah.
Oh, it was 15 pages. And I was like, you need to cut this down because.
And I cut down one page and it went to 14 pages.
No, you added more stuff.
Oh, I did, maybe.
Yeah. He added more stuff and it was like, I was like, we told you to cut it down. He's like, no, I can't. I needed to add more. I was like, no, this isn't going to work. Anyway, that was like a really crazy shoot.
I think we had, we had about 3 to 5 hours sleep within a 24-hour period.
Less than that. It was less than that.
Less than that.
It was about 2 hours, I think.
Oh, he's yawning right now, guys. No. Just thinking about it.
It was about 2 hours sleep, and I think we were starting to get delirious as like the more hours went on, especially when it got dark. It was like, oh man, I couldn't stop laughing. I don't know what happened, but
that was a tough shoot.
It was a tough shoot. It was too many pages. It's too big. Too many people, and we didn't have enough crew. I think is the main thing. And not enough time to set up like lighting and stuff like that. So that's an example of over trying on your first short. And I think that's a big thing. It's like, you know, when you're filming, always make sure like the first thing you do is small and something that you can handle, you know, and be efficient for you as a person to be able to complete. Because if you get like a bigger project and it's not something you've done before, then it can easily get out of control.
Yeah, so on that basis, what do you think people should really look out for when they're creating their first short film? How did you make your short film? And if you can go back, what would you do differently? Because for me, like you said, obviously I wouldn't spend that much money. I would have kept the story a lot simpler. So film after that got a little bit better because of what I've learned. So for those who haven't done their first film, what kind of advice would you give them?
So I didn't really make a short film first. The first thing I ever shot was a music video for a Nigerian gospel artist. And that was possibly one of the most interesting experiences of my career to date, because she tried to sue me.
Oh, shit. Maybe I should try to sue you.
Yeah, you wouldn't get much. and that was quite funny. She was trying to sue me because she believed that I think she paid like £90 for two music videos. And this was the first time that I'd ever
bargain.
Shot.
Bargain.
Yeah, right. It's dirt cheap. Yeah. And like, she was like, I'm paying too much. I was like, what are you even talking about? It was like, come on, like, you're being serious. I did this as a favor to get my career started. And that was quite funny because I just bought my camera and it's the first time I've ever used the camera. And then the next day I went out to shoot this music video. Because I don't know what I was thinking. But anyway, I just hit record. I didn't worry about anything else. I got it on like auto mode. I could figure that much out. Hit record and I started going. And I showed it to a friend of mine. And they said like, oh, it looks quite decent, you know, considering you didn't have any idea what you were doing. And I was like, oh, thanks, you know. So it kind of evolved from music videos. Did a couple of them. And then I went into short films. I attempted to do like an episode of something, like a series that I wanted to do, but, you know, zero budget and not much experience. And it didn't turn out very well. And I'm cool with that. I don't really mind. I think it's kind of good to have stuff there you can look back on and see how much you've progressed as a filmmaker, because if you think like you're going to hit the top spot first of all, that's not going to happen unless you've got loads of money and you hire experts who can do all of that for you. And then I'd question like really whether or not you made that film at all, because, you know, what struggles have you kind of gone through to make the film itself? So yeah, I think for your first film, it's very important to keep everything small. I'd say like limit it to two actors, even one if you can. Make sure that the locations are accessible or easy to get to. You know, use your house, your living room, your bedroom, whatever. And you can always transform a room into something else. You know, we turned one of the bedrooms into a studio, or made it look like one anyway. So that just shows you kind of like the magic of film. That's one of the great things as well, is like nothing is what you believe it to be, you know. So that's kind of like my suggestion. Start small. Don't if you can help it, I know it sounds controversial, but don't use friends to help you. And I only say that because
we're not friends.
Well, I mean like filmmaking friends, yeah, but like your normal friends and stuff.
I don't have any normal friends.
Well, that's why I said don't use them. So you're in a good place. But if you have friends, make sure that they're actually into film, because I had that issue where I tried to make two films, and at first it was like the only people I knew were friends I had, obviously, from like college or whatever. And when I asked them to come on board and everything, they just like, you know, I'm busy, I've got to go out. It's just so many excuses. Some can turn up and et cetera. And it sort of feel like you're on your own, because you have to realize at the end of the day that you're the only one that's interested in filming. So what you do is you go out and network, right? And that's what I did. I went on a website called Indie Talk. I don't know if it's still around, probably is. And from there, I just like connected with loads of different people, tried to see who was in London. And then I met this one guy called Paul on there. We've been friends ever since then. I shot some things with his stuff. And we just kind of networked. And I started to like, you know, look for people actually interested in film, like DPs and runners and stuff. And there I met one good friend called Bradley, who's now like, you know, a good director DP. There's so many people you can meet like just in those positions, and you can just advertise them as well on sites like Mandy or I don't know what the other one's called. Star Now?
Star Now, Mandy, Spotlight, all those kind of directories. And yeah, so that's how we kind of met. You helped me on my first film, and I helped you on one of your films, and then you returned the favor. So it's kind of what I talked about in my first episode of the podcast. And that's how we became, that's how we built this, a good working relationship, helping each other to develop, finding, you need to find that person who you can trust, who can give you feedback without holding back as well. Because every time I shoot a film and I give to Alps feedback, he will shoot me down.
Wait. When he says shoot down, I basically like, I take it from a technical perspective. I always look at like the camera work, the sound, the acting, stuff that, the problem with other people is, and I don't just do it with his film, I do it to my own films as well. Like I can look at my own film and criticize it to be like, okay, I should have done this bit, I should have done that. Because I, you know, it's a learning process, and that's how I always look at films. I don't look at them overall as a piece, because your average audience member can do that. They will say, oh yeah, you know, I enjoyed this film. That's not really the kind of like commentary. I think where most people ask me for feedback is what they're looking for, because, you know, I'm looking at all different kinds of stuff. I'm looking at like, does this scene gel well with the next scene? Is the acting any good? You know, and I think it's important. But in order to do that, you have to be able to criticize your own stuff. And I don't know what you call it. It's that imposter syndrome. You know, I'm very critical of my own stuff, and I won't say it in like a nasty way. I try to be constructive with it. And I think a lot of people appreciate the honesty that I'm coming from, you know, and sometimes a film might not be a genre that I enjoy. So I'll mention it, you know, it's like, it's not really my genre, but you know, I can see some bits here and there. Like you showed me today that, one of your films, and I really like the cinematography on it. And I really like the acting in it, but I just personally felt like it was too long. And if it was shorter, it would have held my attention more and would have been more enjoyable. So there's things where I can be like really openly honest about it, because the thing is like, I'm always craving feedback from people for stuff that, I'm shooting, you know, am I at the level I want to be at? And I don't think I am. And I always want to kind of push it to that next level to keep going to the top, you know? And I think that's really important to find people like that. And trust me, it's very hard to find people who are honest about what they're watching, you know, because when I give you feedback on your stuff, it's not because I want to put you down or anything. It's because I want to see you take those mistakes that were clearly obvious, you know, maybe at the time to you or whatever. And then next time you actually take the time to resolve those mistakes and produce like a piece of quality stuff. Like I really liked the C600 episode 3. Was it episode 3?
Episode 3, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, guys, there's a bit of a news that nobody knows about C600. Alps Lifey actually had the original idea of C600 episode 1. Which part of the idea that was yours? I can't even remember. It's so long ago now.
Well, definitely the dance bit. There was like a...
Was it? I thought the dance bit was my idea.
No, you had like a super agent idea.
Oh.
And I was like, what if it's like a robot who just like dances all of a sudden? Because you wanted an assassin, no?
No, I thought I wanted to have a robot. And I thought your idea was like, yeah, do that and then make the robot do something that's weird. And I thought I came up with a dance. I can't remember. No, maybe you did.
Because I got the... So basically, I watched this short film and it was about a woman with balloons. And these balloons would keep making her dance like nonstop. But at first it was like all fun and everything, but they just won't stop and they keep making her dance. And it got to a point where it was like, she's like trying to run away from the balloons. And it was like, it was so weird, you know, it's just like, and that's an example of excellent storytelling with just one actor, keeping it very simple. You've got a whole bunch of balloons, you've got fake music and you've got one actress. And that was the whole film, balloons and a girl in a room.
That's where you got it from.
Because when I was watching it, I was like, man, it just reminded me of like something like that. And I was like, okay, well, if you got the girl there, it'll be something that people would find unexpected, you know? And I think at that moment, it would draw people in, be like, what's going on, because it's almost like it's so bad it's good, if you get what I mean. It's like, what, this is completely out of context and what's going on here.
Not everybody loves C600, especially episode one, because some people are like, this doesn't make sense. Why would that guy dance with her, then go to the bathroom and groom himself?
I only specified the dancing bit. Everything else is your fault.
Okay, so but going back to what you were talking about, episode three of C600.
Yeah, I think really you kind of took your time on that one. It was filmed over a couple of days. The scenes, you know, the actors themselves and everything was allowed to be fleshed out. And there was just a level of production on that I thought was kind of like excelled from everything else that you'd have done. And I really, like, for me personally, I really like to see it when you take the time with something, it shows that you can really achieve a level of something, you know? And I would, for me personally, that's what I would like to see more of, more stuff where you've kind of like taken maybe a week to make a short film, you know, 7 days.
Make a feature in 7 days.
Yeah, I mean, you've shot, it's kind of crazy when you think about like the time shifts, right? So you've made a feature in like however long, was it 14 days or 10 days?
10 days.
And I'm here saying, why don't you make a short film that like takes you about 7 days? So that's like, you know, when you kind of think about it, why would you do that? But I still feel like there's a reason why, because when you take that time for the lighting, the setup, the actors to get into everything, you're just producing a whole different level of quality. And I think, you know, that's kind of where you get to. Obviously, it's going to cost money. And that's one of the issues that you're going to have. Yeah. But, you know, to be honest with you, if you're like starting out or whatever, even now, you could still find people who would love to put that time in with you because of who you are. You know, they know that you're a good filmmaker and, you know, they want to be part of that process. And you can and that's one of the things at this level is like, you know, it's a pay when you can kind of situation. And it's kind of sad, but you know, ultimately that's the result of the market as it is. But you can find people who are willing to collaborate and stuff. And, you know, sometimes the best things happen when people collaborate, you know, for free or whatever. And the best things can come out from that. So
have you had any bad experiences with people who collaborate apart from me when I didn't pay you? FYI, I did end up paying.
He did pay. And I got upset about it. Very upset. I have had on a music video, I was directing it and shooting it, and it was for a friend of mine. It was his music video, and on there was the singer. And it was kind of like, I explained everything beforehand. I was like, this is going to be a weird fantasy kind of thing, you know. And there was a whole bunch of stuff that was like going on and stuff. And essentially, the problem started when we first started shooting. She had her boyfriend on set, who I had no idea was her boyfriend, right? He was a very, you know, I don't mean it in a bad way, but he was a very camp guy. I thought he was like a gay best friend or something like that. And then she's on a roundabout, and I explained to her, I was like, okay, so I'm going to push the roundabout around, so you're going to keep going.
What's a roundabout?
A roundabout, you know, when you spin.
On the road?
Oh, in a park.
Oh, okay, all right.
Roundabout in a park. And she sat down and I'm like, okay, I'm going to push it and it's going to spin. And I want you to close your eyes and imagine that you're like being transformed into something, right? So it's going to be like all blurred out. This is a long time ago, by the way. She sat there now. And, you know, I was in my young 20s and the moment she sat down, she kind of looked over to her boyfriend and he's come storming over. Like, she's not doing that. That's weird. It's weird. She's not doing it. She's going to be in front of Simon Cowell and all this stuff. She was never going to be in front of Simon Cowell. Trust me.
Where is she now? Maybe she's a superstar. Do we know her?
So it turned out later on, and I found this out for a friend of mine, and a little bit, I'd say a good couple of months after, it turns out that she's actually a amateur porn star. I had no idea. And if I'd have known, I would never have... filmed with her because it's not my kind of thing, you know.
So she's doing well on OnlyFans right now.
I don't know what she. And I don't. To be honest with you, the mute her vocals weren't really that great, and she was a bit weird, and so was the boyfriend. So we had a disagreement on the first shot, And I just kind of like lost my temper, and I gave my camera to one of the runners, and I was like, "You shoot it." And I just sat back throughout the whole thing, literally from start to finish. I didn't get involved whatsoever. It was like afterwards, when the shoot was finished, they were like thanking me. It was like, "Oh, thanks for your time and everything." I was like, "I didn't do anything because you didn't allow me to." And it just, I don't know, I just felt like it was very weird, and I just. Music videos are just basically a pain in the ass.
It was a good story, Alps, but my question was, did you have any bad stories with people you collaborated with?
That was a collaboration.
I was collaborating, okay. I thought I might like people you've worked with, like me and you, another filmmaker, so that people can avoid those mistakes when they meet. You know, like for me, for example, I've met people who are not so dedicated to the craft. They come on for a different reason, whether it's just for the money or just to meet people. I don't know. There's some weird reason. People just come on to meet people as well. And that's what they want. They don't take the career seriously, or they just want to boost their confidence, and then they quit after a while.
The only thing I could say really, to be honest, is like I was on a film set once as a favor to a guy, and he basically didn't feed anyone for like 12 hours. And that to me was like a big no-no. Like,
food is important on set.
And I was like, can I swear?
What's a swearing word?
Pissed.
Yeah, of course you can fucking say pissed.
Yeah, so basically like about 4 or 5 hours in, I was getting like really pissed. And I was like, man, where's the food? It's like, oh yeah, we're going to have it after. We're just going to finish your scene and stuff like that. No water, no food. I'm looking around and everyone's like, disorientated, you know, because filmmaking is very hard. Like after 2-3 hours, you need like a snack or a drink or food, something. And I'm just like looking around, I couldn't see anything. And I was like, man, he's really taking the mick. And then when it finished, everyone was like, right, we're all going to go. No one wanted to stay and like talk. They all wanted to go out and get food, like, cause we were starving. And immediately I like messaged him and I was like, you're bang out of order, 12 hours without food and drink. You know, how do you expect people to work for you again, you know, when you don't even like provide the basics for people? Like, I would rather take 2 slices of bread and a piece of ham than nothing at all. And it wasn't even that. It was like, it was so crazy to me to think like you don't offer someone food. And that to me was like, I didn't work with that person ever again. For that reason, I was just like, nah, you can't even get the basic decency to like feed humans.
Unfortunately, these kind of things still happen. I know people who go on set, they've been told to bring their own food, overworked, underpaid. So this industry is quite nasty. You know, you just got to watch out the jobs you apply, the people you work with, and just make sure that they treat you how you should treat them. No.
I think what he's trying to say is that you should treat people how you would want them to treat you. And that's a very good point. And, you know, and it is, you know, if we'd have been told to bring our own food, I wouldn't have personally had a problem with it, but nothing was mentioned. So when we came there and no food was like given, it was like, shit, what are we going to do? You know? And then it was, it carried on, and every hour was like, yeah, we're just going to get this shot, then we'll break, and get this shot, then we'll break. And then he's like, afterwards, oh, who wants to eat, guys? And everyone's looking at him like, F off, you know?
So in terms of your own filmmaking journey, how far have you come from your first film that you made, your first music video, to now? Do you feel like you have reached the level you're happy with, but obviously you have more to go, or you think you're falling behind, or you've exceeded your own expectation?
Well, definitely since I first started, I've improved a lot, and I'm still relatively young. I think I've still got a lot more to go. I wouldn't say, in terms of piecing together a film, I'm at the level I want to be at. I think now though, I'm definitely in the mindset of, creating universes within my films and stuff. I think I'm kind of happy with
the Riddle universe,
the life of universe. we'll have a studio battle once we're like millionaires. And like, oh yeah, Riddiverse versus, it'll be like DC versus Marvel. And you're definitely Marvel and I'm definitely okay, DC.
Thanks.
Yeah, so that's kind of like the contrast between us. But I think I mean, my latest film, No Girls in the Dojo, which is in the festivals right now, I wasn't really expecting anything from it. It was my first action film. It was my first time shooting like multi-day shoots, which is kind of weird because I've shot a lot of short films.
We did an action film together called Barber Fight, and that was my first and my last.
That I didn't really think that was a bad film, to be honest. I thought it was quite good. It wasn't perfect, obviously, but I thought like quality-wise and action scenes-wise, it was quite decent. I think it should have been shot over like 2-3 days. Rather than just the one, and that would have seemed like a jump in quality. But because we had to do everything on the day and then the light was changing up, if you remember, one minute the person's in the chair and it's daylight, the next minute it's like completely dark outside. And that's why it's, I always say it's so important to take the time to film, you know, to make sure all your lighting stays consistent and everything. If you can shoot 2-3 days rather than one day, then do that instead. But
so yeah, your first action film, Dojo.
Yeah, first action film, that was like, it ended up being a 5-day shoot because of, we had one day where this, okay, so this film, I was like a bit cursed. So in the beginning, we were supposed to have like this DP with his own red and everything like that. Then the night before the first day of shooting, he turns around and says, have I got like an SD card? A mini mag for the red, and I was like,
I was gonna say red, don't take SD card.
Yeah, it was like mini mags for the red, and I was like, if I had a mini mag for the red, I'd probably have a red. And then it was like, it transpired that I would need a mini mag reader, PL lenses, which they were supposed to be provided. So essentially, all I would have gotten was the red body and nothing else. And I was just like, I think this was at like 10 o'clock at night, and my shoot was due 10 a.m.
There you go. This is another example of bad collaboration.
Yeah. So, yeah.
You'd never work with him again, would you?
No. He did give us some lighting though, which ended up being really like essential for the shoot. So, you know, I have to thank him for that. But otherwise it became very like, when someone says to me something like, okay, we're going to give you this and this and this, you know, I'm expecting it and that's it. You know, whether it's a favor or not or whatever, you know, I don't care. If you've said it, that's it. You've done it. And,
there you go, guys. Be careful what you say to Alps. He'll expect what you've said.
And it was 10 o'clock at night and I was about ready to go to bed, you know, and it pinged on my phone, ping. And I was reading everything and I was like going back and forth. I was trying to figure out a way behind. I was like, man. And then, yeah, it was kind of crazy. I had to scramble. Luckily, and I think that's important why you have to have your own camera, is because if it's situations like that, you can just pick it up and use whatever. So we ended up using my Fuji X-T3. I scrambled everything together, the batteries, started putting things on charge. I didn't know what I was doing. First thing I did, everything on charge, and then I went to bed. And I was like, I'm just going to wake up super early because, number one, I'm like emotionally imbalanced right now. I'm really stressed out. Number two, I work better in the mornings than I do at night. So, so I focused on that and then we managed to get the shoot off. Great. The next weekend after for the next shoot at 8 p.m. And I remember this specifically. It was so weird because it was like specifically the day before each shoot weekend. So we had the Saturday, which was the fight scene, and I'd spoken to the makeup artist for like 3-4 days. And I was like, we need this, we need scars, we need blood and everything like that. And they were like, yeah, that's great. I'm going to go and get the prosthetics and all that stuff. And then 8 p.m. the day before the shoot. And I specifically said to them, if there's any day you cannot do, please make sure that it's not the fight day because that is the most important scene of the whole film. And then 8 p.m. on the Friday, they get a message saying, it was basically an excuse. I'm not going to go into detail about what it was. Because it may or may not be true. I don't believe it is true, but they just made up some excuse about someone else and that they couldn't make it because of them. And it just didn't make sense to me because it was not
this
like...
This film sounds cursed.
It was. I was literally like about to cry because it was like... we had like wire rigging. So we had like wire rigging that day. We had like a big fight scene and everything. And then like we managed to find a different makeup artist, but we didn't have no prosthetics and... they were using like hair putty to make molds out of for the scars and stuff like that. And it didn't look the greatest, but it was the best they could do because they literally like had an hour notice to get here, and they were coming from another shoot. So it just got hectic, man. It just got really hectic, and that whole day was wasted. We didn't use anything from it at all, like not even a little bit. And
that's painful to hear, really painful. Like, yeah, luckily I've never had anything like that happen to me apart from one shoot. I don't know if you remember when the iPhone 11, I think, or 12, is one of the iPhone 11 or 12 when it came out. And I said to Louis, we've got to make the first iPhone ever movie, which I did with iPhone 13, and that was a success. We'll learn from that. So with the iPhone 11 or 12, I didn't prepare for the lighting well. I didn't prepare for the sound well. All I thought about was getting this one take trick shot of the whole movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God. That was probably my worst ever. So we spent the whole day there shooting this whole movie with a little bit of action. It was never released. I think Louis put some clips up on his profile, but I was too embarrassed to release that. That was the only film that has never got released. You remember that, right?
I would have said that was a good call. And I think, I think the less said about that, the better. But, you know, you're here now and you've made like, whatever, 30 plus films or whatever it is. So, you know, it's not always a bad thing. I always try and say that you should never drop a project, but sometimes things are out of your hand and like, you know, it just goes beyond there. But
so, yeah. So what's your ultimate goal? Where do you see yourself in 10 years, apart from creating this universe, competing with my universe?
I think in 10 years, I'll probably have like an Oscar. I'm pretty certain of it.
Me too.
We'll
get it together. It'll be a collaboration.
It'll be our films versus each other. It's like up for nomination. Ritter versus is Lifeyverse. And it'll be interesting. But I don't see it as like a rivalry. I think in the same way, it's like I want to see the quality of content that you produce to be better. And then I want to like produce better stuff than yours. So that it's like, it's a continuing battle, if you know what I mean. It's like you do better and I do better. Okay, cool. What didn't you like about my stuff? Okay, then I can learn from that, you know. Because I always look for the stuff that didn't quite make sense. You know, was it the editing? Was it like, did I not get enough shots in there? Was the directing not very good? And I can usually tell myself like what was wrong that time. And that's an important topic as well. You know, spreading yourself too thin on a set. Because if you're directing and you're doing like other stuff, you immediately lose the advantage you have of directing the actors to the ability that they can do. No matter how good an actor is, obviously I think there's a certain point where they get to where they're like, they barely need anything. They just need to be told what to do.
With the acting, it's interesting because a lot of people ask me, how do you choose your actors for your films? And I tend to always respond is the people I work with. Often, and that always goes back to the same actor, use it again and again. But some people don't agree with that method. Like, how do you choose your actors? Because if you haven't worked with an actor before, it's a bit of a hit and miss that they won't be as good as the other actors you worked with before. But then you could pick someone who's a superstar and it would be an amazing film. It's a hard choice, isn't it, between...
Well, I think the issue is that if you keep working with the same actors, you never know what you're missing from someone else, you know?
The grass is always greener on the other side.
Well, you know, you might have green grass, but there might be different flowers that you can plant and watch them grow, you know? So, and I think there are some directors, if you notice, like on the big screens, there are like Tarantino, for example. He likes to use some actors over and over again.
DiCaprio.
Yeah. Scorsese. You know, there's definitely directors out there. It's not just like us who use the same actors in the films or whatever. But I think there's a danger of when you use these actors again in this, like at this level, they kind of like their character always seems the same. And so, for example, that's where I'm hoping to push Louis in this viral series. I really want to test his character. You know, I really want to put him to levels that we haven't really seen him in do before, you know. And
apart from Cowboy, by the way, guys, it's a very good film.
Oh yeah, Cowboy was an interesting film. That was a very, there was no script for it. We just shot it and we had a lot of fun. And I think, like, I could see as I think sometimes there's a moment when you're filming, I don't know if you've had it when you've filmed your stuff, but sometimes you record like a scene or something and you're watching it and you can feel like something really good is happening. And you just get like a spark inside you and you can't wait to like export that footage and see what it looks like and piece it together. Sometimes I'll get it like for other scenes and films and stuff like that, but for Cowboy all the way through, I was like, this is something really unique and different that we've been doing here. And we didn't really have any direction. I think that's what was so exciting, is like we didn't know what was going to happen next. You know, we tried out different things and stuff. So but in terms of what you're just saying, I still think you should work with new actors, because for example, on one film, there was one actress that I was really blown away by their performance. You know, they literally, how I imagined it, they kind of brought more to the table. And if anything, I did them a disservice by putting him in the film that I did, because it wasn't very good, but their character was exceptional. And it's those kind of people there. It's like, okay, wow, this person's bringing something unique and new. And I think when you start working with more and more new actors, you kind of see like, okay, this person's got something really good about them. You know, they might be a great comedy actor. They might be a great drama actor, horror actor, or something like that. And you kind of like, once you found them, you're like, okay, you fit this narrative perfectly. So I want to work with you again on something, you know. But whereas if you work with the same actor in different genres, it may not work out so well, you know. Like Jim Carrey, he's typically known as a comedy actor. So if you start putting him in loads of, like, back then, if you started to put him in loads of drama roles that weren't comedy-based, I don't think his career would have worked as well, you know. One of the actors who are, like, exception to that is Tom Hanks, because I think he started off with some comedy stuff, I think.
Oh, did he?
I think he started.
He's got a big range, hasn't he?
He's got a huge range, and that's the kind of, like, actor where it's very hard to find someone who's good at almost everything. The only thing I don't think I've seen him in is a superhero film.
He's in a Marvel now. I don't know. Yeah.
But, you know, he's an example of an actor who, when you think about it on the face of it, he shouldn't really be like a top movie star, because he's not like ripped. You know, he's not like, he doesn't fit the definition of like
Tom Cruise or Brad Pitt.
Yeah, you know, the guy with the looks and everything. Like, you know, I think he was a good-looking guy when he was younger, but he wasn't like what Hollywood thought was the ideal A-lister. And his acting, it was what kind of brought him there, you know? He was just so easy to watch. Whatever he's in, you just kind of watch it and you're just like, you believe that he's in that universe, you know? You have to keep going through different actors to find people like that. You might find your next Tom Hanks. You might find your next DiCaprio, you know. Different actors have got different methods, you know. And that's kind of why I don't like working with the same people over and over again. I like to introduce new people in, you know, because they add something different. And I think actors will benefit from that as well. They see an actor preparing for something in a different way. I've had actors who will only listen to their lines all night with earphones before they go to bed. Some others, they only learn their lines on the day. Some get into the character like 2-3 days beforehand and they'll start acting like him, you know? So there's all different like acting methods and stuff like that. I don't care how you do it. I just want you to be there on set and ready for it. And we'll get through that journey together. And I think it's kind of exciting to see a new actor as well. What are they bringing to the table? And it's hit and miss. Sometimes you get a good actor, sometimes you get a bad actor. I've definitely had like, I've had one experience where I was like younger and we were shooting something and we didn't finish this project, by the way. And I was filming the scenes and stuff and this guy was so bad. I mean, like terrible. He was absolutely terrible. And I was just cringing and he was trying to be all serious and I was just watching it and I was like, this is not working. The same day later that day, I had to call him and I was like, I'm really sorry, but having just watched like 2 minutes of you on the screen, I don't think I can work with you.
What's wrong with him?
He just, well, first of all, he had like, he was getting really stressed out in the beginning of the day. He was like, oh, I'm not going to come down. So there was like all those problems. But we eventually got him to come down and everything. And then we started to film. But it was, his acting was just terrible. It was just, it was so bad. I just couldn't like, it would be a lie for me to keep filming and try to salvage something. I'd be wasting my time. So I ended up kicking him off. And he got really upset about that. He started going...
You've ruined his career. He's definitely not an actor right now.
I haven't heard about him in a long time, to be honest with you. I don't know. I mean, it was so early those days. He's probably done loads of other stuff and whatever. But I just could tell from looking at him when he was performing, I was like, this isn't working for me. And that's very important to make a decision like that. And I was so scared to like call him and tell him that, because I was like, how am I going to do this in a nice way? Because he's obviously going to ask me why. And then he begged me. He was like... He's like, please, we can reshoot, you know, you can guide me and everything. And I was just like, it's just, no matter what we do, it's just not going to, I can see it already. Like, it's not going to work, buddy. And I wish you all the best. And then after that, he went a bit crazy and went on a rampage against me.
Sounds like a bad breakup.
Almost, yeah. Because he started writing that he was shooting this project and that it was his idea and... like he just got really like kind of, so I had to message him again. I was like, what are you doing? I was like, you're a 30 something year old man and you're trying to sabotage like a young 20 guy who's learning and stuff like that. And I was like, I just told you it's not working. It's not, you weren't getting paid for it anyway.
What if he's listening right now, Alps?
Well, he can deal with it. it's just one of those things, you know, and I haven't mentioned any names anyway, so it's all good. But yeah, I wish him all the best of luck. You know, maybe he can overcome that. It's not a big deal, you know. I'm not anybody now, but I certainly wasn't anybody then. So, you know, take it on the chin and learn.
Interesting journey. Just before I wrap up, any advice for a first-time filmmaker? Maybe a camera you could recommend, someone who's just starting?
So camera-wise, if you're just starting and... you're looking for a cheap system to invest in, I would definitely go with the Panasonic GH series, GH4 or GH5. They're cheap enough to get now. You can adapt pretty much any lenses to them, and you'll have a great time shooting with them. They're really reliable cameras. One of my favorite, you know, the GH4 was a very favorite camera of mine, or the X-T3. And I guess if you're just starting out as well, the first thing to do is make your short. There's so many people. I met a guy who was so creative, and I mean like proper creative, way more creative than I was. And I was really surprised. His ideas were fantastic. His script writing was excellent. He just refused to film unless it was perfect. And I was like, come on, man. I was like, just shoot the thing. And he's like, no, I don't have the money. I don't have the... So then make something that doesn't require the money, you know? The worst thing you can do as a first-time filmmaker or even a filmmaker at any time is to make an excuse as to why you can't film something. At least shoot it, you know. And that's the key thing. Shooting, once you've shot a film, you'll start to get a buzz and a firing, like, okay, wow, I'm so excited for this project. And then when you edit together, you'll think it's like the best thing in the world. And then someone else will watch it and tell you that it's shit, and you'll be like, oh no, my whole world's falling apart. I need to make the next one better. And that's how the journey continues. At least it did for me anyway.
Yeah, just I think that I totally agree. It's about making that first film without spending too much time on it, so you can learn from your mistakes. You can never be successful without failure. So just got to remember, keep making those films and learning from that. Thanks, Alps. So guys, if you are a filmmaker, you want to learn a bit more about the equipment that he uses, lighting gear, camera gear, lenses, there's a Patreon edition podcast on my Patreon page. You can access that. So access that if you join Patreon at patreon.com/BlakeRidder, where you will hear Alps again with me talking about all the different gears. So thanks, Alps.
Thank you very much for having me.